Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. All right, here we go.
We're on the air.
I think.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio, a weekly call-in talk show presented each Thursday from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern. Featuring Ron with Florida Estates Winery in Lambda Lakes, Florida. We encourage listeners to call and participate during this hour-long broadcast. Dial 646-727-3235. 646-727-3235 anytime during the show. Winery location, contact information, and upcoming events are presented at the end of the show. Sit back, relax, and join us with a glass of world-class wine made right here in Florida. And now, vineyardist, tasting expert, cellar master, and winemaker with Florida Estates Winery, here's Ron.
That's right. Ron is here. This is Mike.
Good crowd tonight. Thank you.
Yeah, they break the screen. Here we go. Had a little bit too much, I think. Okay. Checking.
Show your wine. Sit down now.
All right. Yeah, we prefer the big sit down. So we are live, and we are live on Blog Talk Radio and on the music side. So if you're listening to me on the music side, please be sure to call in, because this is a live show on that side as well. The music has stopped. And, yeah, I'm just checking the meters, so that's working. And you can give us a call during this hour from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time at area code 646-727-3235. It's Thursday. It's 7 p.m., and it's time for Ron with Wine. Last week we started off, we did the French wines and France. All information there about the labels and different types and everything, and we're continuing on again this week, but Ron has something a little different to start off the show tonight, and so here he is, Ron, Florida Estates Winery. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
All right.
Thank you. That's 7 p.m. Eastern time, too, if anyone's listening anywhere else in the country, because Blog Talk Radio goes around the world, so 7 p.m. Eastern time, so if you want to call in, then I'd love to talk to you. Talked a little bit last week about Bordeaux. We started talking about France and the Bordeaux region, and started to cover the left bank. I'll review that in a minute here. But I do want to talk about something first tonight before we get into back into our French wine-growing regions and stuff. That is, I was digging through some old books of mine. I've been involved with wine for many years, like 37, 38 years. And I've got books, and I found a box where I had some old books. And one of these books was about American wines and listed a lot of varietals that were very popular then. And this is in the book was copyrighted 75. So this was in the mid-70s that these were being grown. So we're looking at, 35 years ago? Almost 35, 34 and a half, 35 years ago. So I just found it very interesting that some of the wines that they were talking about there, and I remember tasting a lot of these, which was even more interesting to me, and all of you old wine drinkers out there, and I do literally mean old, not drinking wine for a long time at once or getting a little bit older, you might remember some of these. A lot of these weren't very popular, and a lot of them were only found in certain areas, California, New York, a few states in the Midwest. But I'm going to go through these. Now, I just, again, just to share the information with you and just tell you a little bit about some of these. And I remember a lot of these. I remember tasting a lot of these. So this has made it even more exciting for me to see this. And if you do find any of these while you're out in your searches for different wines to try, it's always fun to try to pick up one. A lot of these have been established for many, many years, and the vineyards have been replaced with better-selling vineyards, and some of them are still being grown, but used as blends and stuff. So we'll go through these for a few minutes here. First one, Aurora, A-U-R-O-R-A, Aurora, or the French pronunciation, Aurore, the E-R-A is not pronounced. This is wine that really started to become popular in the 70s, early 70s, mid-70s. It is a French-American hybrid grape, a white wine, grows very well east of the Mississippi. Michigan, New York State made a lot of them. I know we have some New York State listeners on here. I've received emails from them. I don't know if they're still growing there. So if any of these I do mention from New York are still being grown up there, I appreciate an email or contacting us, letting us know that they are still being grown so I can pass on to our listeners. But the Aurora grown in New York, a very prolific vine, made a pale yellow grape that turned pink at harvest time. And so it was a very unique color in the glass. They left a little bit of the pink onto it. I remember seeing some Auroras back in the 70s. It harvests early, matures early, and so they were able to harvest early, which really gave it a distinct advantage going on the east because the winter setting in early in the east coast. So the Aurora grape was really thought to be a great grape for that area. And again, I don't think it ever really caught on. It was used as a base for some of the sparkling wines in New York and Minnesota and those areas too. Next one, Bacco Noir, B-A-C-O, Bacco Noir, N-O-I-R, as in a Pinot Noir, Bacco Noir. This is another French-American hybrid grape that made a very full-bodied, deep red wine. Another one grown very extensively in the eastern United States. The very hearty winter grape, a lot of vigor to it. Really some really nice quality grapes. This is a grape from the Cabernet Sauvignon descent, a hybrid from Cabernet and I can't think of the other one right now. I had it earlier and I've lost it now. I'm sorry. But it was used a lot as a dry table wine. Whenever you saw jug wines that said Burgundy, which is basically a generic term for jug wines we use here, the Bacco Noir was used a lot, blending that with Sauvignon Blanc and some of the other grapes to come out with that. The Bacco Noir grape also aged well. It took to oak quite well and aged really quite well. Next one, Chalet, or Chalet, C-H-E-L-O-I-S, Chalet. Another French-American hybrid that became very popular, again, in the Midwest and the East. A red grape that made a lighter red type wine. It was one that also aged quite well and improved with aging. It resembled a Burgundy a lot back when they were making it. That's why they thought the grape was going to be so great in America. But it never, again, one of those that never really caught on. Chenin Blanc, C-H-E-N-I-N, Chenin Blanc, B-L-A-N-C. This is still around. You can still find some Chenin Blanc grapes. Originally came from the Loire Valley of France. It was planted in California quite extensively. And it was used in California a lot as a Chablis. Again, another generic term, like the Burgundy. We use Chablis as a generic term to describe a white wine. Chenin Blanc was used a lot in that aspect. It was fermented and stuck in a bottle to resemble a French Chablis, which is a Chardonnay, usually made a little bit drier, not much oak in it, but it had some fruitiness and perfuminess, and sometimes they would make the fruitiness would come out and overpower the dryness, and it became quite popular for a while there. I remember, you know, drinking a lot of Chenin Blancs, the poor man's Chardonnay, you know, basically is what I used to always refer to it as for years there, and it was much cheaper than Chardonnay grapes and Chardonnay wines. We used to grab the Chenin Blanc quite often. Concord, everyone's familiar with that, and they still use that Concord grape. It's the juice and jam grape, basically, of America. It's a native grape, Native American grape, Not real good for winemaking. It gives that classic. Most American grapes, native grapes in America, give sort of a grape jelly type flavor or aftertaste to it, and a jammy taste in the mouth and aftertaste. And the Concord grape is a classic example of that. It always gives that great jelly characteristic to it. Grown extensively in the East. Not planted very many other places besides Eastern United States, but being a Native American grape, probably the reason. Next one, Dachshunac, D-E, and then C-H-A-U-N-A-C, Dachshunac. I've already found Dachshunac, and Dachshunac is also another pronunciation. This is a French hybrid used for red and rosé wines, and was named for the Canadian researcher that was responsible for making this grape popular up in Canada, Ontario area. It was also planted quite extensively in northeastern United States, brought down from Canada and used in that area there. The varietal is a light color, not a lot of character in the color, very, very light color, but it was blended a lot and was able to improve with oak aging and in the bottle. It took well to the bottle. A lot of wines, if you're not careful, can get bottle shock. I had actually a previous batch of Chardonnay that we made did not bottle well, and it took a good month and a half before the wine started to really come into its own in the bottle. I always refer to it as bottle shock, not to be confused with the movie Bottle Shock, but it was this wine aged quite well in the bottle. I remember having a Dachshunac years ago, and wasn't quite impressed. That's probably why I remember, because it was, you know, nondescript at the time. Delaware. This is a very good cold weather grape. It is very resistant to cold weather. The reason it's planted so extensively in the East back then. I don't know if it's still planted or not. I tend to think it is, but I am not sure. So, again, if people out there listening are familiar, please let me know. The fruit was the grape, the fruit itself, was a pinkish, reddish fruit that came out with white juice. Very good eating grape, actually. This was Delaware grape. You might be familiar with it as an eating grape, but it made a decent wine, not real heavy, lighter, fruitier wine, made into a lot of sparkling wines, light table wines. The name Delaware grapes did not come from the state of Delaware, but from Delaware, Ohio, where the vine thrived up on the Great Lakes area of Ohio, east of Cincinnati, east of Cleveland, that area there. Next one is the Duchess. This is another Native American grape that has been replaced. You don't hear about the Duchess anymore. I remember seeing the Duchess used as a blend at times, and I don't recall ever tasting it. It wasn't a good strong grape. It lacked the vigor that it really needed to grow well in the East. Also, it was subject to fungus disease, which is the death kill of grapes. I mean, you don't want to have to worry about fungus all the time on your grapes, and the Duchess was one of those. The yellow-green fruit, a very good eating grape, not only one of those Native American grapes that was good for eating because of the fruitiness in it, and didn't come out with that great jelly, great grape jam aromas and flavors that you get soft in American grapes. So it was used quite well for that. It may be one of our eating grapes right now, possibly, that we're still seeing on our shelves. Not used too much for wines, though. Emerald Riesling, E-M-E-R-A-L-D, Emerald Riesling, R-I-E-S-L-I-N-G, Riesling. This was developed by the University of California, Davis. It was made to adapt well to the Central Valley, which is very hot in California. The grape came out with a very high acid, though, which partially is due to the heat. You get a hot climate, and you tend to get wines that are a little bit higher in acid. It's very prolific in that climate, too. So the Emerald Riesling didn't really catch on a whole lot, though, but was used in the Central Valley. The Foch, or Maricel Foch, F-O-C-H, Foch, or M-A-R-E-C-H-A-L, Maricel. This is a blue-black hybrid grape from the Alsatian French region, origin. Very garnet, a very deep red wine. The Gamay grape is related to the Foch. I remember seeing a Foch quite often. You don't anymore, and I never really thought too much about why or why not until I actually found this book was talking about it again. And it was, as a young wine, it was very heavy, very strong. It's like drinking a very young, highly tannic Cabernet. But as it aged, and it aged well in the bottle after a little bit of oak and bottle aging, it really softened up and made for a really full-bodied, spicy wine. Very pleasant. I used to drink a lot of Foch and Maricel Foch years ago in California. But they've, you know, it just sort of disappeared. The Gamay grape is related, I think I might have said that, to the Foch. Next one is the Fumé Blanc, or Blanc Fumé, or Napa Fumé, F-U-M-E, with the dialectic mark above the E. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Dialectic? Okay. We discussed this last week. That's why we know.
Diacritic.
Diacritic. Okay. I knew I might have said it wrong. Diacritic mark above the E on the Fumé. And the Blanc, B-L-A-N-C. The Fumé Blanc is a Sauvignon Blanc. Basically, that's what it is. But when it when they were growing at Napa, Robert Mondavi of Mondavi Winery fame liked the name Fumé, which in French means smoked, and so he decided to use the Fumé Blanc instead of Sauvignon Blanc when he put a lot of wines out in California and used it as under the Fumé Blanc name. So just a delightful dry white wine, like the Sauvignon Blanc, it was made. And they quit calling it the Fumé Blanc and went back to calling it the Sauvignon Blanc, probably because Sauvignon Blanc became so widely distributed around the world. And to stop confusion, Napa went back to calling it what it was. Fumé, like I say, in France, means smoked. And the classic French Sauvignon Blanc from the Loire Valley take on a smoky hue, a smoky, almost a taste of smokiness to it. And that's why Robert Mondavi enjoyed the name so much. Not that the ones that he planted did, it's just that he was trying to be a little bit unique, and that's what happens. So they've gotten away from calling it the Fumé Blanc, and now it's just the Sauvignon Blanc, or Blanc Fumé, or Napa Fumé, and those are no longer used. Gamay, or the Napa Gamay, or the Gamay Noir, G-A-M-A-Y, Gamay, Napa Gamay, Gamay Noir, N-O-I-R. This is not the Gamay grape. It is different. It's descendants of the Gamay grape. The Gamay Noir, I used to see a lot of California Gamay, you'd find them a lot. And light, fruity wines, red grapes, descendants again of the true Gamay from the French Beaujolais district. Related also to the Pinot Noir grape of the French Burgundy district, the Gamay Noir. It didn't need any age or anything. A lot of rosés, Gamay rosé, and rosé Gamay, and stuff like that. You'd see a lot of bottles and labels, named the Gamay Rosé, used quite often with the Gamay grape. Blended a lot, too. You probably, if they are still planted, if the grapes are still being used, most of the time is for blend, but they've gotten away from that quite extensively and went into just calling it our, not calling it anything, just getting away from planting it. Green Hungarian. This was one. I used to enjoy the Green Hungarian. I used to drink a lot of Green Hungarian, and probably because it was rather inexpensive at the time. You can get yourself a 750 bottle back in the mid-late 70s for anywhere from $2 to $4. And it was a white grape. Not really sure where the origin came from. It didn't come from Hungary. It's just the name they slapped on it. Pleasant wine, California wine. The Green Hungarian is used in blends a lot, made the classic California Chablis. This is another one of those wines that they blended to make what they would call a Chablis. Usually a dry or semi-dry wine with a little bit of sweetness. It actually depended on what winery made it. Some of them left a little bit of sweetness in it, some of them took the sweetness out. But it's just a pleasant, light, white wine that you could find everywhere at a reasonable price that was just pleasant, just a pleasant wine. Some wineries even used it to make a sparkling wine, a champagne type wine from it. But most of them just, you know, came out with the Green Hungarian as a grape itself. Johannesburg Riesling. Johannesburg Riesling. This is Johannesburg Riesling, or Johannesburg Riesling, the J's not pronounced if you want to do it properly. Johannesburg Riesling, are the white Riesling. Basically the same thing. Old famous German Schloss Johannesburg wine and the American version of Riesling are basically the same ones. Riesling has been called lots of things. The Emerald Riesling is a California hybrid, though, which I just mentioned to you, which was developed. The Gray Riesling is not in the Riesling family at all, but comes from a different French grape entirely. And you can find a lot of American wines labeled Riesling as a generic term. That isn't used so much anymore, though. Again, we're speaking of this original 1970s look. You would see things labeled Riesling, and you don't see that so much anymore. You still see the generic terms for Burgundy and Chablis, but Riesling is not as popular now, is it? Because there are so many Rieslings out there. There's also the Sherbaner grape, which is from German origins, and that is also sometimes called the Franken Riesling. Again, no relation at all to the wider Johannesburg Riesling. The white Riesling and the Johannesburg Riesling are now almost interchangeable. I want to say that Johannesburg Riesling and the Riesling are the same thing now. There is a winery out of Washington State that calls her wine at Johannesburg Riesling. I think it's just a Riesling grape. So Johannesburg Riesling you won't find too much anymore. Next one, Malvasia Bianca. Malvasia Bianca, Malvasia, Malvasia Bianca, Bianca. This is from the Muscat grape family. Now, don't be confused. The Muscat is not the Muscadine. They are different grapes. I think we covered that in our grape talk 3 or 4 weeks ago. The Muscat and the Muscadine are different grapes. The Malvasia Bianca is from the island of Madeira and also known as the Malmsey. And when I was talking about the Muscat, I mentioned the Malmsey grapes and one of the types of them. It is, in California, it's an entirely different wine, which is growing in popularity. There's, you don't see the name Malvasia Bianca too much anymore. If you're going to see anything, you're going to see Muscat or Moscato or different names along that line. But the Malvasia Bianca is not that popular as a name. Grenache. This is one you see quite often as a Grenache Rosé. This was very, very popular. Grenache Rosé, G-R-E-N-A-C-H-E, Grenache. Dark purple grape thrives in France, also in Spain, where it's called Grenachia. Light red wine out of California. Really quite prolific in the Central Valley. Good hot weather grape. And when I was talking about Spain a while ago, two or three weeks ago, I mentioned the Grenache grape also growing well in some of the hotter regions and the hotter vineyards there. It's noted out of California for the a trace of orange under the nose and colors of it, a little bit of oranginess to it. Gray Riesling, G-R-E-Y, Gray Riesling. Again, I mentioned this earlier, this is more popular. It is a different grape, but it's pretty much faded out. You don't see Gray Riesling anymore. Grignolino. This is from Italy's Piedmont District. Still growing there quite often. California tried to grow it for a while. You don't see it too often in California. It's used as a red wine and also a rosé. More the Grignolino, well, I'm having a tongue-tied to pronounce this one, is usually found in Italy, and you won't find it too much in the California Central Valley like you used to. Niagara, we all know Niagara. Niagara is a very popular grape, native to the eastern United States. This is another one of those Native American grapes that does give you sort of a jamminess to it. Light green grape, a pale yellow wine with soft characteristics, can be very ordinary to very, very good. It just depends on how it's made and how much time is spent with it. Very grapey grape, the table grape, a Niagara grape. I've always associated with like reaching down in the store, buying yourself a green grape, popping in your mouth, and that's what it tastes like. It tastes like you're just sipping a glass of green grapes. Always very good and always very enjoyable, but you can still find it. It's growing quite extensively still in the Niagara region and the Finger Lakes areas and even on down in Hudson areas. Petite Syrah, P-E-T-I-T-E, Syrah, S-I-R-A-H. This is a heavy red wine grown, it was grown quite extensively in California. It was thought to be the Syrah grape of the Rhone Valley, and it's now really thought not to be. It's said to be a different grape. Used to give color to the a lot of other wines because it's so dark and rich color. Ages well, so it blends well with other wines and doesn't take anything away from them, and it gives them color and continues the aging. The Petit Syrah, I am still hearing arguments that it's the same grape as the Syrah. I don't honestly believe it is. If anyone knows of any DNA testing between the two that can distinguish it or let me know, I would be more than happy to hear from you. But as far as I'm concerned, the Petit Syrah and Syrah are actually two different grapes. Ruby Cabernet. This is something we don't hear about anymore either. This is a cross between a Cabernet Sauvignon grape and a Carignan. This was developed by the University of California, Davis, and it was adapted for the climate, for California climate, again, Central Valley. Always trying to find grapes that would grow well in the Central Valley. Ruby Cabernet never really caught on because it's so ordinary. It grew quite well in the Central Valley, and it did extremely well. It was very prolific. It produced a lot of grapes, and those grapes produced a fair amount of juice, but it was never anything that people rushed out to get. It was a rather ordinary wine. You used to buy Ruby Cabernet in jugs. And, you know, I mean, I think worst I ever got sick in my life was on a jug of Ruby Cabernet. But not found too much anymore. It's something that's pretty much faded away. The next one for you is the Scuppernong, and we all know the Scuppernong. This is part of the Muscadine family. This is grown quite extensively in Carolinas, Virginia, even here in Florida, Georgia, up the East Coast a little bit. Makes for a classic American grape sweet wine. A lot of people like the big grape, a lot of seeds, tough skin, grows in bunches, or I'm sorry, not bunches, grows in clusters instead of bunches. It's not your classic bunch grape, it's a cluster. A best description is that, like cherries, how cherries grow. It was, the Scuppernong is the classic example of the great jamminess, too, you find in a lot of American grapes. It always comes out with that little, I always refer to it as a foxy flavor, but grape jam, grape jelly type is probably the best description. Semillon, S-E-M-I-L-L-O-N, Semillon. White grape, quite often blended with Sauvignon Blanc in France to make your grape French sauternes, and we'll get into that as we talk more about the French wines. It was tried a lot in California. I remember tasting the Semillon quite extensively for a while, but then they cut back on it. A few states, Washington, Oregon, other places that tried it, they try it in the sweet style, leave the sugar high and try in the sweet style, drop the sugar out, a little bit more alcoholic and make it in the drier style. Never really caught on. Still used as a blend, but not so much as a varietal grape in itself. Sauval Blanc, S-E-Y-V-A-L, Sauval Blanc, B-L-A-N-C. This is a French-American hybrid that makes very nice white wine. Chardonnay is the one of the parents of the Sauval Blanc. It's the lineage of Chardonnay, so it did pick up quite a few of the characteristics of it. A good young wine, usually made in a very fresh, fruity style, but it could also take well to oak and develop a lot of characteristics as with Asian oak. Used a lot in the Midwest and the East. I don't know. Sauvignon Blanc, I remember seeing some even in California back many years ago, but you don't see it too much anymore any other places. It doesn't it's got a good hardiness for the colder climates. That's why it's been planted so extensively. It was planted so extensively. I don't know if it's still out there. Throughout the cold climates, again, throughout the Midwest on up into Minnesota and across New York and southern Canada, it didn't give that great jelly overtones which you find in a lot of the native grapes. It was blended out. Chardonnay was one parent, but the other parent was an American native grape. And you're going to ask me what it is, and I don't know. Vermouth. Vermouth is a grape derivative. I don't know if how many people know, but when you order yourself a vodka, actually you are ordering a grape in there. I'm sorry, a martini. You're ordering a grape in there. Vermouth is used a lot as an appetizer wine. Good by itself on the rocks or with a twist of lemon. Throw in a shot of soda, club soda or something. Used a lot in cocktails. It is usually dry vermouth is the most common. Sweet vermouth you can find. They add flavoring to meals and stuff. So vermouth is a great derivative for all of those who are not familiar with that. And you can find a lot of wineries that do a vermouth, especially out in California. A lot of them have a vermouth that they put out and just basically raises the alcohol and just gives a much stronger wine. Vidal Blanc, V-I-D-A-L, Vidal Blanc, B-L-A-N-C. This is a French-American hybrid. It's a white grape. It's also being planted, was planted, and I still think it is planted. As far as I know, the Vidal Blanc is still being used in the Midwest and at the East. Probably not as much now as it was, but it's used for blends a lot of times back there. Quite a few wineries throughout the country, and I say Midwest, going from Missouri all the way east through Ohio and Indiana, Pennsylvania, Illinois, all those places had quite a bit of Vidal Blanc planted quite a few years ago, well, 35 years ago. Few vineyards survive. And then the last one of the list here, which this is taking me longer than just a few minutes, but that's okay. I think it's interesting, is the Vignol Ravot. V-I-G-N-O-L-E-S, the Vignol. Now, the Vignol grape, is actually, it was called Vignol more often than not. The Ravot, or Ravot 51, it is the French original name, French hybrid grape of Ravot, much more easy to pronounce than the Vignol. People of V-I-G-N-O-L-E-S, Vignols, or all sorts of different ways it was pronounced. The Ravot 51 and Vignol is a hybrid grape of Chardonnay descent, Chardonnay parentage. It's a light body, used a lot for blends to produce the classic Chablis that we sell here in the States. The Vignol was blended a lot, or the Ravot 51 blended with the Chardonnay grape in France in the Chablis region to make Chablis. A rather inexpensive grape, so it was easy to grow and use. And because it was rather an expensive grape, wineries in the United States started to use it. California, New York, New Jersey, Michigan, Maryland, up and on the East Coast. Cold hardy, survived quite well through the winters. And so it was used, it was grown because of that reason there. A Chardonnay grape became very expensive back in the 70s. The Vignol came out and was a lot less expensive. And so because of that, a lot of that was planted. Now the Chardonnay grape is being grown everywhere, and the price has dropped. And so you don't see as much of the Vignol being planted around. And those are some of the old grapes and a few of them that are still surviving.
Wow.
Thank you. I found that interesting myself.
Yeah.
I wanted to throw that out and share it with everyone tonight.
Very good.
So, we'll do a little bit of go back to Bordeaux in France now, French wine region. France, again, to remind you, has their three basic wine appellations. These three wine appellations pretty well describe the types of wines you're getting. The first one being the Appellation d'Original Contrôlée, which was established in 1935, the highest quality wines that you're going to get out of France. There are quite a few of those around. Some of them are ancient wineries and vineyards and stuff. The next one is the Vin de Pays, or VDP, which originally it was called the Appellation d'Origine Simple. This was established in 1973. These wines don't have as quite of a high of standard as the AOC, but it does have higher standards than your bottom wine, which is called Vin de Table, which is the lower one, or your basic table wine. So some of the areas in France are noted for the higher quality ones, the better known ones. I just want to review that. We have been talking about Bordeaux. We've been talking about the Bordeaux region. located in actually southwest France, the Bordeaux region, basically divided up into two sections called the left bank and the right bank. The left bank, as you're looking at a map, not as you're standing in the middle of France, the left bank is the one that is on the southwest side of the rivers that run down through there, main river, the Gironde, I believe it's pronounced G-I-R-O-N-D-E, Gironde River and its tributaries, the Dordogne and the Dronne, divide Bordeaux into basically two regions, the left and right banks. We have been discussing the left bank, and we probably will continue to discuss it this week because we're not going to get to the right bank, obviously, until next week, because I talked about old grapes. Left bank. A lot of your classic old wineries are from left bank. We talked about Saint-Estèphe, Payoc, and Saint-Julien. Did we discuss Saint-Julien last week?
I'm looking at. No.
No,
I don't have that. Yeah, I don't have that written down there.
Yeah, I didn't think we did. Yeah, see. Saint-Julien, Saint-Julien is located just south of the Puyallup region of in the left bank. It is close to the Gironde River, and I'm going to have to look that up to be sure I'm pronouncing that right. I, again, apologize for my horrible pronunciation of a lot of this stuff. Because it's so close to the river, it creates a very soft, rich, dark-colored, balanced, elegant wines. The soils are very good for drainage and excellent drainage, actually, so you don't have the water setting in it. The wines, the Cabernet Sauvignon grape, really thrives in this area, as do the Merlot and Cabernet Franc, which are used for blending. So you get a lot of the three that are blended together that make just for some gorgeous wines. A lot of firm tannins. They are just a strong, powerful wine. Very expensive. Some of your high-end wineries come from there. There's a total of 11 Grand Cru Classé wines from this region. A lot of them that you go to the store and try to get, and you'll sticker shock how well they are, how much they get for these from this region here. Names, all chateaus, all estates, all great big growing areas, great big mansion areas that they have had established there for years and years and years. The Cabernet Sauvignon being the predominant grape, but yet, again, the Merlot and Cabernet Franc are used to as a blend quite often. The soil is a very fine gravelly soil. Being close to the river, it gives it a good drainage. A lot of the vineyards are planted close to the river. As you get further away from it, the gravel mixes with some clay, so your drainage isn't quite as good, but it still makes for some fantastic wines out there. The area is a small area compared to some of the other areas on there, but still noted quite well for the wines they put out there. Margaux, M-A-R-G-A-U-X, Margaux, the X is silent. This is the largest area on the left bank, home to Chateau Margaux. This is one of the classic first growth regions of France. And excuse me while I take a sip of my Ohio Cabernet Sauvignon.
Ohio. All right. And if you'd like to get on the program, 646-727-3235. The lines are open. Give us a call. We have about 15 minutes left in the program. 646-727-3235. Okay, thank you.
Ohio from Farlands Winery. Farlands, F-I-R-E, Farlands Winery. The vineyard is on an island at the east end of Lake Erie called Isle St. George. And a unique little area that has its own AVA, American Viticulture Area, St. George Isle.
Wow.
Real nice, fruity Cabernet. I'm really excited. This is a 2004, and I've kept it in the wine refrigerator, and it's really really opened up quite well. So, but I'm gonna go back to Margaux. Margaux is the soil in Margaux is classified as one of the thinnest of all the areas on the left bank. More gravel than anything. It drains well in rainy years, so therefore it produces some highly fragrant wines, which are balanced and aged quite well. The aging potential is phenomenal on these. Cabernet Sauvignon, again, dominates from this area with Merlot and Cabernet Franc used as blending in, you know, varying percentages. Probably Margaux is noted for the elegance, finesse, sublimity of their wines. It's not in-your-face wines. It's a nice, pleasant style of wines that just makes you sit up and just really take notice of them. They have a nice balance and called very feminine by many people because of the finesse and the elegance of it. The Margaux is the southernmost of the four principal Medoc appellations. Laying on the left bank, it's about 13 miles north of the city of Bordeaux. It's 3,350 acres planted, bringing in approximately 640,000 cases a year. Quite a few. Again, being the largest one, they bring in a lot. Chateau Margaux being the large one there, the biggest one there. The soil, as I said, is diverse, but usually pretty thin. Noted first growth from the Margaux region is one of them that's been around for years and years. Although back in the mid-70s and 80s, the Margaux region suffered. They went through a period of inconsistency. They weren't really sure what they tried to mess with the formula, something that had been established for years, and they started to mess with the formula. And then technical advances came in, and they got people that knew what they were doing in there, and they changed all that, and they have, starting in the mid-1990s, they have really jumped back to their previous glory days, which is great because it's just a phenomenal area. There's the Haute Médoc region. You can always find good wines labeled that, which is our next region we're going to talk about. This is right next to the Margaux region and the southernmost area of the left bank. This is extends from the northern, and I'm trying to look at my map here at the same time because I got my little map to try to narrow it down so I can tell you what it is. Haute Médoc is what it is, Haute Medoc with a
diacritical mark.
Diacritical mark over the E. Yeah, I keep on wanting to leave the L out of there for some reason. The Haute Médoc is surrounds other areas. The Saint, it's pretty much covers all the areas outside of the Saint Estèphe, the Payoc, and the Saint Julien regions. It is a fairly large region. Also, it encompasses the Margaux and the Lystrac areas. The wines from this area has the same major qualities that you find in the neighboring areas. The soil varies because it is a fairly large area. But again, Cabernet Franc, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon vines are planted extensively in all these, and they all grow quite well. The red wines of this area are your classic traditional Bordeaux wines. And you can actually find these a little bit more reasonably priced, too. Some of the Pomidoc wines are excellent at a more affordable price. And then the Medoc region is also right around there, located. It's more up toward the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, toward the end. Oh, there comes somebody calling here directly instead of calling on the line.
Wow.
this is the Medoc region is Atlantic Ocean on one side and the estuary on the other, Western France. Actually, it's the largest Bordeaux region of all of them, with the Margaux being real close to being about the same size. It is probably the best known region because of its location. It's 50 miles long, and it's amazing. You think about these regions, but they really, really are quite small overall. It's not like well, you say Napa Valley. Napa Valley is really quite small if you've been there. Overall, the areas are even smaller. Napa is, if you divide Napa, the entire valley, up into two or three or four different areas, you're describing some of these areas in France. They aren't really enormously large. The Medoc region is broken into two sub-regions, northern region called Medoc, and the Haut Medoc is in the southern region. The wines, again, are your classic Cabernet Merlot and Cabernet Franc. And these usually are lighter style, softer wines because of the soil. They're not making real heavy, strong, powerful, long-aging wines. They're making more of a fruity style, lighter style that matches well with game, roast beef, portobello mushrooms even. That would be something I think would be great, too, with some of these wines. Next one is the Pays-Saclay Onayon, I believe it's pronounced. Pays-Saclay-Onayon. This is an area within the Graves. Actually, these next couple of areas are within wines in the Graves. The Graves is area is on the outskirts of the city of Bordeaux. It is a highly concentrated, earthy style of reds, nice firm tannins, a lot of body, a lot of character. Cabernet Sauvignon based wines, again, coming out with these strong wines. Again, we always have to bring up the fact that it's the Merlot and Cabernet Franc are planted around the areas too, which are used for blending. But Cabernet and Merlot, probably the biggest planted ones, and Cabernet Franc as a backup. The soil, predominant gravel, real tough soil, but it makes for the grapes struggle a bit and come out with a fantastic wine out of this area. Reasonably priced on some of them, but can be quite expensive on others, depending on where you are, what chateau or what areas you're getting. The they also make a white wine, a Sauvignon Blanc. And this is also blended with Semillon. And I read Semillon just a little bit earlier in the program about being planted and used as a French blend with Sauvignon Blanc. It makes for a rich, crisp white wine with good structure, a lemon grapefruitiness to it, a little grassiness underneath it. The classic Sauvignon Blanc, this is the standard. I do believe New Zealand, I personally think New Zealand is coming out with some great Sauvignon Blancs that rival some of these out of France, but you hear a French fan hear me say that, they would squawk and scream. But New Zealand is really coming out with some beautiful Sauvignon Blancs. The wines out of the Pasakalei-Noyan region were some of the first exported overseas. Barrels of the Gravis region is Gravis, how it's pronounced, were shipped to England during the English reign over France back in the early, between 1152 and 1453. So these were very, very early wine and grape vines and very popular back then. Thomas Jefferson also owned a lot of them, and you may be familiar with Thomas Jefferson wines that were found in his cellar a few years ago. These were from the Gravis region of France. These were the heavy, powerful reds and Cabernets that were coming out of there. Gravis, the name comes from the gravelly soil in that region, by the way. It's why it's called Gravis. I'm going to stop there because we're getting low on the time. I spent more time on the old grapes than I did on this, on France, but we will continue this next week and talk some more about the left bank and get into the right bank of the Bordeaux region.
Okay. Wow. Very good. That was, that's quite a bit of from the 70s information that you had there. And I got most of that down. let's see. We also, let me see, before we tie out of here, I want to thank, we had a couple of guests, and Greg is in the chat room. Thank you, Greg, for joining us. I believe he's from probably close by to the winery. So if you know Greg from somewhere, that's probably...
Oh, I know Greg, yeah. Greg, hello, Greg, if you're still there. Glad to hear you.
He's in the chat room. I don't know if he's actually tied into the audio part. Also, anybody listening to the music portion, it will return to the music at 8 o'clock, so that'll be going on. We did a simulcast today, which was easy enough to do. September 19th coming up. September 19th is the next wine class from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. at the Florida States Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida, and all kinds of topics are covered during the three-hour class. It's a great class, very informative, and there's also tasting involved and a lot of other cool features. If you want more information about that, check out the Florida States Winery website at floridaestateswines.com, and all of the contact information is coming up right after this. Thank you, Ron, and join us next week, Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio and on the music side. I got to come up with a name.
Thank you very much, Mike. Thank you, crowd.
Thank you. And let's bring up the outro. I'll be right back. Well, actually, I won't. We'll see you all next week. Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
This concludes our call-in talk show for the evening. Special thank you to Ron Hunt of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Visit the winery online at www.floridaestateswines.com. That's WINES.com. Email address for the winery is corp@floon.com. That's corp@FLEWN.com. Or call area code 813-996-2113. If you're in the area, Florida Estates Winery is located 4 miles west of Interstate 75 on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. For information on our show and music stream, visit us on our MySpace page at www.myspace.com/ChicoDog1. That's DAWG and the number 1. Email address is podcast@ChicoDog.com. Follow the show on Twitter at twitter.com/MikeWCFL. WCFL as in Wesley Chapel, Florida. If you have a topic you would like to discuss on air, please contact me. Chico Dog Live is a weekly talk show hosted on Blog Talk Radio. We encourage our listeners to participate in our online chat room or call us on air at 646-727-3235. and tell your friends and family about us. This episode will be available as a free download on iTunes and our Blog Talk Radio show page. Thank you for listening to the program. We'll see you next week on Chico Dog Live.
I think it's, yeah, it's disconnected.
I think we're done.
Yeah, the other one kept going, but okay, I can, that one's manual. Yeah, he said it was, let me make sure it's off. Put automatic here. Yeah, he said he's from Dade City. It's Greg First.
Yeah, he's he owns a reception hall